You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. And welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Judy Ansel. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Pipefitters Local 533 and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 53. Pipefitters Local 533, being the best in the industry is earned. Our craftsmanship, brotherhood, training, and job safety make the difference. Building and buying union create better wages and living standards for all working families. And IBEW 53 covers the western half of Missouri. If you are a power lineman, traffic and streetlight technician, or substation technician, and you're not in a union, go to IBEWLocal53.org to find out how to join and get the pay you deserve. In the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI, thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, last month, over 4,000 rank-and-file labor activists met in Chicago for the biannual Labor Notes Conference. There were 250 workshops teaching how to make good trouble, plenaries with luminaries like Amazon's Chris Smalls, the new Teamster president, Sean O'Brien, and even Bernie Sanders made an appearance. The Heartland Labor Forum was there, too. We even got an award. This week, we'll highlight the excitement, activities, and solidarity that made this year's event the most successful ever. In the news, Good Jobs First's Greg LeRoy reacts to the $1 billion subsidy to Panasonic in Kansas, and an update on Starbucks organizing in Kansas City. Our feature at the end of the show is Washington Window on Workers with Mark Grunberg. And now for the news. The news from our side, July 28th, 2022. There's a lot of finger-pointing going on in Kansas over who's to blame for no job guarantees in the Panasonic battery subsidies, which pledge about $1 billion in subsidies to build the plant on the site of the old Sunflower Army Ammunition Plant in DeSoto, Kansas. It turns out Panasonic pitted Kansas and Oklahoma against each other to get the best deal. This type of race-to-the-bottom economic development in which giant corporations become welfare queens has been criticized for years by the Washington, D.C.-based Good Jobs First. We called up Greg LeRoy, their executive director, to ask him what's wrong with the bipartisan Panasonic deal and are there alternatives to this kind of beggar-the-state way to generate jobs. Here's what he said. Welcome to the show, Greg. Tell us, what's your immediate reaction to the fact that there's no jobs guarantees or job quality requirements in the Panasonic deal with the state of Kansas?
I think it's outrageous, but kind of predictable because the deal was negotiated so secretly and everybody just grabbed onto the 4,000 jobs promise in the press releases without looking at the fine print for a while. But the fact is, the deal is really an incentive for capital. rather than jobs, right? When you, most of the money in, is an investment credit that is dollar for dollar cut in income taxes or payments, refundable credits actually, to Panasonic for spending money on equipment and machinery and construction. It's not for hiring. The payroll tax rebate is a slight incentive for hiring, but the sales tax exemption, for example, which is another big piece of the money in the deal, that's an incentive to buy stuff, but not employ people. And the fact that there's no wage standards, that the projected wage is actually below the average, the median wage now in Johnson County, they're going to pay the company to pull wages down in the Kansas City metro area. What's that about? That's just outrageous is the only word.
Politicians seem to think that they have to give these kind of deals in order to generate jobs. And then they're in a big competition. This one, I guess, was with the state of Oklahoma, another right-to-work state. Do they have to go for these kinds of deals? Do they have any alternatives?
The problem is they think they do. And as long as they think they do, they do. We know we have an 80-year-old tax break industrial complex in this country. It dates back to the 1930s. It's got a lot of moving parts, including site location consultants and other companies that specialize in helping companies get these massive deals. But no, you know, this deal would have been better if Governor Kelly and the legislature and her Commerce Department had let it be public. You know, there would have been wage rules and local hiring preferences and maybe a project labor agreement or prevailing construction wage requirements and hiring standards, all those things, if there had been public knowledge and public comment.
Of course, we have a very Republican legislature who hates prevailing wage and such things. Politically, that is tough. Your webpage has what's called a violation tracker. Very briefly, what is that and where do people find it?
Sure. So at goodjobsfirst.org, which is our front page, just click on databases or scroll down. You'll see either one. Violation tracker is a database which has 22 years of regulatory penalties on companies, all kinds of regulatory penalties, wage theft, environmental, race and sex discrimination, foreign corrupt practices, antitrust, and not just from federal agencies, but also your state environmental agencies and your state wage department and your state insurance commissioner's fines. Yeah. White collar crime all over the country for 22 mm-hmm. years.
Okay. And that's goodjobsfirst.org?
Yes, ma'am.
We've been talking to Greg Leroy. Thanks very much, Greg.
Great to see you, Judy.
We'll get Greg Leroy back in September to talk about alternative ways to generate jobs.
A strike and major protests have been going on for several weeks in Tegucigalpa, Honduras, against contractor B.L. Harbert that is building a new gigantic U.S. embassy. Harbert is an international construction company which frequently builds U.S. embassies abroad. They are based in Birmingham, Alabama. Their website says, "We build anything, anywhere," and claims, "Nothing is more important than sending each of our employees home safely at the end of each day." Apparently, that's not the case in Honduras. Honduras expert Andreana Pine tweeted, "Many Hondurans have asked why U.S. needs even bigger, more impenetrable fortresses." The U.S. Embassy has characterized the dispute as a technical problem because changes in labor regulations. But the workers point out that chopped off fingers due to safety violation is more of a technical problem than with labor law. They complain that from the start, Harbert failed to provide hard hats and safety vests. Pine reported yesterday that workers sent a delegation to the embassy to present their demands, that it intervened to ask the contractor to negotiate, to respect Honduran law, and to pay overtime and workers' compensation to injured workers. However, the embassy said its human rights representative was too busy to meet. The staff, however, was not too busy to deploy sharpshooters on the embassy roof.
Here's an update from Starbucks Workers United about organizing in Kansas City. The Independence 23rd Street store workers are voting whether to have a union by mail. The results will be available September 16th. On Monday, August 1st, Starbucks workers at 75th and I-35 in Overland Park will be on strike due to the unfair labor practice of Starbucks 69 new benefits and raises to union stores. Despite the union sending a notice to Starbucks that union shops will happily accept the new benefits and raises. This particular store has endured intense retaliation through their union drive, and as a result have gone on two unfair labor practice strikes already. The store is also not even a certified union shop because Starbucks objected to their election results. However, there is no reason for Starbucks to deny this store raises and benefits. The workers know this and are taking a stance. Show your solidarity with them Monday. Join them at 9 a.m. if possible, or any time from 5 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. They are striking all day. The only Kansas City store to win a union so far is the 39th and Arrowhead store in Independence. They, along with dozens of other Starbucks unions across the nation, will soon be demanding a national coordinated bargaining with the company. Tonight's show was read by Michael Savoy, Judy Ansel, and I'm Tom Gebkin.
What does it mean to be working class? Is that something from out of the past? Do we always gotta come in last? That's the question I'm gonna ask. What does it mean to be working class? 'Cause today you say you're middle class. You can't pay the doctor, your car needs gas. You're still paying off your college class. What you owe your credit card is never passed. Still you're middle class this and middle class that. Upper lower middle class till you eat your hat, got the gap on your back. You got a little fat. You're still paying for the chair where you just sat. Is it all over just like that? Who stole the good life? Where's it at? Oh, was middle class just a little dream made up for you on your TV screen? Where everybody's comfy, or so it seems, and no one ever eats rice and beans. Because in the beginning, there was just two classes. There was the elite, and there was the masses. We did the work. They kicked our asses. Most everything passes. There is still two classes, those who got it and those who don't. We think we're going to get it, but really we won't. Those who own the companies and make the big deals, every deal could cost you a meal. And for real, not too many people hold the power. They make $1 million while they take a shower. There's the owning class and the working class. Where are you at? Are you slow or fast? All you got to do is do the math. If you got a job, you're working class. If you're out of a job, you're really working class. We build the houses, work the fields. We run the hospitals and fix the meals. We make the family and work at home. Sometimes that's the hardest work of all. We clean the office. We teach the kids. Everything around us is something we did.
I say union, you say power. I say union, you. I say union, you say. I say union, you say. Union, 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 union. Tell me what democracy looks like. Tell me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Tell me what democracy looks like. Tell me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
So you know you're at Labor Notes because it looks like democracy up in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. From day one, there's been like a diversity of people in here. It looks like the UN or something up in here. And I know you're all troublemakers. Any troublemakers in the house? My name is Elise Bryant. My pronouns are she, her. I come from the land of the Apatique people, indigenous people, in the place that the Europeans call Maryland. I am a union woman, just as strong as I can be. I do not like the bosses, and the bosses don't like me. Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Okay, okay, y'all, okay. I don't care if the Glee Club teacher told you not to sing. I don't care if the nuns told you to stand in the back of the room and just move your lips.
I don't care if the rabbi threw up both hands when, oy vey, gnug. I don't care if your children ran screaming from the nursery. No, mommy, no, daddy, don't sing again. Please don't sing again. As the brother said in the workshop, I don't care if you start singing, the shower water stops. This is not about whether you can carry a tune in a bucket. This is about calm union. Calm is a Latin word for with. Union is a Latin word for one. Okay?
Okay.
Got it. Here we go. Greetings, siblings, sisters, brothers, comrades, which comes from the French word meaning roommate, family. I bring you greetings on behalf of the Labor Heritage Foundation and the Coalition of Labor Union Women, which I am the president of. It is an honor and a pleasure to be back here with my Labor Notes family. I am from Detroit, Michigan. I was there when it started, Labor Notes, and I want to thank my Labor Notes family for keeping this going and building it up and all of you being here. Thank you. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me. And before I'd be a slave, y'all know the song. And before I'd be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free. I want to thank the African ancestors, the ones who stepped off the ship, kissed the ground, and willed me to be here, who brought us all together in this room because all life began in Africa. Well, this month, this week, this day, we honor Juneteenth. And Juneteenth, as we know, first of all, that tell me if you say this, if you agree with this. Race is a political construct. Used to divide the working class. Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves not because he believed in anti-slavery, because he was making a political move to undermine the Southern strategy and the Confederate nation. Okay? So Juneteenth is a national holiday that Biden put in, but it had been celebrated for decades, and it started in Galveston, Texas. Why Galveston, Texas? Because it was an island off the coast of Texas. I learned this at Labor Notes the other day, okay, y'all? I didn't know this until Reverend D.L. stood in our workshop and told us, because he was from Galveston, Texas, that they got the information so late after Abraham Lincoln had announced the Emancipation Proclamation. So we celebrate Juneteenth in honor of all the ancestors that are represented in this room, for all of us who are here to make a difference and to say that freedom is for everybody, not just for a few.
You have just heard the opening words of Elise Bryant at the Great Labor Arts Exchange and Juneteenth celebration at this year's Labor Notes Convention. Hi, I'm Michael Savoie, your host, and one of the 4,000 labor activists at this year's convention. Our show tonight intends to share the excitement, the love, the purpose, and the solidarity of this year's convention. Let me unequivocally say that the salvation of America is dependent on the vitality of the labor movement. Now we will hear opening remarks from Alexandria Bradbury and a welcome to Chicago from Stacey Davis Gates.
Oh, troublemakers! Welcome to the 2022 Labor Notes Conference. I'm Alexandra Bradbury, editor of Labor Notes magazine, and I am so happy to welcome you here. It's the first conference of the Roaring Twenties. So let's get a sense of who we got in the room. Do we have any teachers in the room tonight? How about Teamsters? Any Teamsters here? How about Starbucks and Amazon workers? Are there any union stewards here? Anyone who's been on strike in the last year or two? Form a union in your workplace? And is there anyone here who's at your very first Labor Notes conference ever? Look at that. That is amazing. It is my great honor to introduce you to a truly an incredible lineup of speakers tonight. It is 100% working class heroes up here to the left and right of me. Introducing them is the easy part. I have outsourced the tough part of the job to my coworker Courtney, who has to cut them off if they talk too long. But many of tonight's speakers are addressing labor notes for the first time. One of them is here for the first time since 1993, when he had a little bit more hair. And at that time, it was a much smaller crowd. This is far and away the biggest labor notes conference we have ever had. And it's interesting. It is a very hopeful time for the labor movement at the same time that things around us are very bad, right? We are in many ways living through a very hard time. And yet the outlook for working people is hopeful and full of an excitement that we haven't seen in quite a long time. The terrain has shifted, right? And there's a new spirit of resistance, and we all feel it. And it's part of what is making us so excited in this room together. Since we last gathered as Labor Notes 4 years ago, a lot of horrible things have happened. A lot of workers got called essential and found out that what that meant is your job is essential and your life is not essential. A lot of our workloads intensified. A lot of us lost our jobs. A lot of us are feeling the heightened climate pressures that mean we are working outside in wildfires and choking heat, and our planes are grounded. A lot of people experienced that on the way here. And yet this labor shortage, so-called, gave us all a dose of leverage and of courage and has prompted a rash of strikes we saw last year. At Amazon and at Starbucks, workers have scored electrifying wins in union drives that seemed impossible, didn't they? And in both the Teamsters and the auto workers, union reformers have notched landmark wins, achievements whose effects will unfold over years to come. So there's a lot to celebrate, and there's a hope in the air. And that is what has brought a boggling 4,000 of you to Chicago this year. We're here to learn from each other. We're here to teach each other. We're here to talk strategy, to gain skills, and to get the hope and the inspiration that is going to keep us going for the fights that we need to change the world. And that's what you're going to hear about from all these folks around me tonight. And here to welcome us to Chicago, Stacey Davis Gates.
Dude, I'm taking in all of this love. Because them tweets and those letters. Woo. Even with every flaw, there is no place I would rather fight for justice and equity. Welcome, yeah, to Chi-Town. The next time we got to get y'all on the south side, though, with a little flavor. That's what we have to do. Listen up, Labor Notes. It is absolutely beautiful to see each and every one of you here, and not because of the fellowship alone, but because everyone in here intends to do something when they get back to their home. You intend to go back home and transform. I need for you to know that labor is a few things. Labor is plural. We speak in we and us. Labor is action because it doesn't mean anything until you do a thing. And labor is transformative. We change all things. And the only way we change all things is if we understand the origin of power. The origin of power is in the purpose of what we do in our labor union. And in the labor world today, 2022, labor has got to be redefined to include the worker from sun up to sun down. It has got to include the workers 365, 7 days a week, 24-hour a day life. Workers suffer from police brutality. Workers have their children's schools closed down. Workers are facing eviction because housing is unaffordable. Workers are suffering under unfair immigration policies. Workers are dying because we refuse to include they instead of he or him or she or her. Workers are everyone who needs an advocate. And our labor, what we must do is add the and. You can fight for a wage and a benefit while fighting for women's reproductive rights. You can fight for sick days at the same time you fight for affordable housing. And membership means that you are a human being in need of working class love, solidarity, and unity. We don't narrow how people get in. We expand the definition of union. We expand the definition of membership. We expand the definition of workers' rights to human rights. The only people who can do this, because they are funded, because they are organized, because they are clear about what the wins entail, are workers. So workers, I'm going to need us to be bold and transformative and redefining and transforming the spaces in which we occupy, because we are workers and we are mothers. We are workers and we are daughters. We are workers and we are sisters. We are workers and. We have a duty to save this country from itself. So let us leave here with the love and the motivation to rescue our union siblings and. Thank you.
This year's Labor Notes Conference hosted a star-studded array of labor's best and brightest. In the second half of our show, we will hear from U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, Teamster President Sean O'Brien, Mark Meinster from the United Electrical Workers. We will also visit the organizing campaigns at Amazon and Starbucks.
Understanding Israel-Palestine airs every Friday morning, 9:30 to 10, here on KKFI. Interviews with scholars, policy experts, journalists, and activists focus on this century-long struggle for peace and justice, where realities are too complex for soundbites and too important to ignore. So join us here on Understanding Israel-Palestine, Friday mornings from 9:30 to 10.
August 2nd is primary election day in Kansas, Missouri. Educate yourself and vote August 2nd. This message is a public service of KKFI.
The Labor Notes Conference is always a gathering place for labor's strategic thinkers. Listen as Mark Meinster, United Electrical Workers, addresses the possibilities of a new labor upsurge.
So Dan Clawson was a sociology professor and labor activist at UMass Amherst. And he wrote a book published in 2003 called The Next Upsurge. And there have been other scholars who'd written about this before, but this book really sort of popularized the notion that, clarifying that unions do not grow incrementally. Unions do not grow sort of on a trend line that looks, you know, like this. Unions grow in big spurts when millions of people join the labor movement over the course of a short period of time. And he goes on to talk about some of the reasons why that is and some factors that might be, you know, instructive for people looking at this. One of the things he says is that you don't know you're in an upsurge when an upsurge is happening. You're not going to know until you look back 4, 5, 6 years later. And so we can't know if we're in an upsurge. The other thing he says, and this is, I think, true, is that you can't manufacture an upsurge. There's a whole range of all kinds of different forces, social forces, economic forces, political forces that go into whether something like that will happen. But you can look at upsurges throughout history. And the two big ones in the 20th century here were the upsurge in the 30s that built the industrial labor movement, and the upsurge in the 1960s and 1970s, where waves of public sector workers joined the labor movement. You can look at, and you can see this happens, the same dynamic in, you know, all across the world, Italy, Spain, Korea, South Africa, Brazil, Chile. And you see some common factors at the beginning of those upsurges. So one of them is a willingness to take risks, audacity. Don't underestimate the importance of just being audacious, including the audacity to put forward really bold demands that go above and beyond what others in the labor movement might be demanding. You've got to be willing to lose if you're going to take risks. And many upsurges are preceded by years and years of failed strikes. So for example, in the 1930s, the big upsurge in 1936, 1937 was preceded by years in the early 1930s of huge, massive class battles that were all lost from 1930 to 1933. But people learned during those losses, and those people became, in many cases, the cadre that built the Congress of Industrial Organizations, the precursor to today's AFL-CIO. The second thing is strikes. You don't see an upsurge without massive strikes, and strikes that challenge labor law, that break labor law, that in many cases are not protected by any, you know, affirmative right to actually go out on strike. Union elections are not the thing that typically signals an upsurge. It's typically strikes. And one of the things you see is that those strikes beget other strikes. The militancy catches hold. And you see it start to spread. And you saw that in the 30s, and you saw that in the 1960s with teachers in New York striking, and then that catching on throughout the country and building a whole movement of teacher unionism in this country. Then the third thing would be what we just heard about, workers taking the process into their own hands. You can't have an upsurge relying on paid staff. Paid staff don't create an upsurge. An upsurge happens when millions of workers take the organizing process into their own hands and run with it and communicate it and transfer it to other workers who take it and run with it. You saw that with sit-down strikes, for example, in the 1930s. You often see new organizations develop, new networks, new formations, new federations, or you see really sharp challenges within existing organizations, but it's typically not sort of the mainstream of the labor movement that's in leadership, that's leading the charge during an upsurge, although they typically will get involved after. And then you see a big role of the left, whether it's the organized left or sort of the broader social movement left, in these upsurges. And so because you often aren't getting support from the established labor movement, you know, the big unions out there, people who are politically committed to the idea of, you know, workers fighting in workplaces and building strong, powerful militant unions, you know, help out, and they provide resources, whether it's legal support or picket line support or organizing training or money or whatever it might be. You need that social force as a resource, especially when you don't have the full backing of the rest of us in the labor movement. There's got to be a center of gravity that exists separate and apart from the mainstream of the labor movement for an upsurge to happen in many cases. And so, you know, we've seen many of those factors at play here. You know, we've seen strikes at Starbucks, right? We've seen a new organization come to the fore at Amazon. You know, again, we've certainly seen workers take hold of the process. You know, there are some major obstacles still that we have to overcome to make this really, really big, but that's clearly what we should all be thinking about, I think, right now, is how we scale this, because when you look at upsurges, there are individual people who did specific things at the beginning of all those upsurges that made it into an upsurge. You can't always predict what those are and whether they'll work, but it's the people in this room and the people like us who are going to make this moment become an upsurge.
Senator Bernie Sanders electrified the conference with his usual lesson on the inequities of corporate economics. Listen up.
The last point that I want to make is that the time is long overdue for us to take on and challenge the uber capitalist culture of today. You know, hundreds of thousands of people have criminal records in this country today for the quote-unquote crime of smoking marijuana. Yes, we will legalize it. But, and this is what I mean about our current culture. Smoking marijuana in a number of states today is illegal. But I'll tell you what's not illegal. It is not illegal for the heads of major oil and coal companies who knew 40 years ago that their product was helping to destroy the planet. And what they did with that information is to fund organizations who lied about the reality of climate change. It is not illegal for the heads of drug companies to raise prices so that millions of people cannot afford the medicine they desperately need and some of them die. That's not illegal. There was a study that came out today from Yale, and the estimate is that 338,000 people died during the pandemic unnecessarily because we do not have Medicare for all. Over 300,000 people, but it is not criminal for those people to spend huge amounts of money continuing the corrupt and dysfunctional healthcare system that we have. So, brothers and sisters, we are in truly a pivotal moment in American history. And our job is to bring the working class together, black and white, Asian American, Native American, gay and straight. Our job is to bring our people together. Around an agenda that says we are going to put an end to this outrageous level of corporate greed. And in fact, we are going to provide the working families with the respect the dignity and the security that they deserve. Thank you all.
Teamster President Sean O'Brien lets corporate America know that we won't be asking for permission.
Are you ready to fight? My brother, you ready to fight? Well, listen, it's simple. It is very simple moving forward. We can't do it as individuals. We've got to do it as a team. We got to make certain that when we're going out there and we're fighting for contracts like we're going to do at United Parcel Service, and we're going to make certain that we negotiate the best agreement with zero concessions, we are going to put that company on its knees if it needs to happen, and that is going to invigorate the workforce. Now look, we've got to take the fight on. We got to get grimy. We got to get gritty, right? And we've got to sacrifice. There's going to be a lot of sacrifices. And we sometimes have to be a little bit creative, a little bit powerful. And some people, like corporate America, these politicians, need to feel a little pain. They need to feel a little pain, right? And I have a motto. As a union leader, pretty much the neighborhood I grew up in, which was riddled with controversy and always disputes, I'd rather ask for forgiveness than permission, right? So I have a message. I have a message. First off, everybody in this room, every labor organization, every rank and file member, every leader, I just want to tell you right now, Teamsters Local, 1.2 million strong, has your back and will always have your back. But I've got a message. I've got a message for those white-collar crime syndicates in corporate America, for those crooked politicians that don't want to listen and respect where we're coming from, right? 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 It's going to get bloody. It's going to get painful. So ice up. And secondly, when you take one of us on, you take all of us on. And I'll say this. When you come to the fight with organized labor, if you are corporate America and you want to take us on, or you're a crooked, corruptible politician, put your helmets on, buckle your chin straps, it's a full contact sport.
The Labor Notes Conference provided a very fertile meeting place for the hottest organizing campaigns in North America. Starbucks, and Amazon. Starbucks has become the closest thing to a labor upsurge that labor has seen in years. Here now from Michelle Eisen from Starbucks Workers United.
I, like hundreds of thousands of service workers in the U.S., had worked through the bulk of the pandemic, putting ourselves and our families at risk daily. And in almost all cases, the companies that we worked for completely failed us. We were called essential, but we were treated like we were disposable. And I was done. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew I couldn't continue to work for a company that would so blatantly undervalue its partners. At most, I probably had a few months left in me. And then shortly after I made that decision, I received a text message from one of my fellow partners. And she asked me if I would like to get a cup of coffee after one of our shifts that week, which is weird because we literally serve coffee all day. But I agreed, and it was at that meeting that she asked me what I thought about Starbucks unionizing. To which I replied, I had never thought about it. I knew very little about organized labor, but I knew that it included very little of the service industry. But in spite of that, I asked her to tell me everything she knew. And when she finished, I calmly replied that I was interested, but I did not know how much time I was going to be able to commit. My industry was opening back up for the first time post-pandemic, and I was going to be busy with production work, but I was certainly not going to stand in their way. And then about a week after we filed our petition, I was called into my first anti-union meeting with Starbucks Corporate. And we sat in a circle in a hotel conference room, and listen to Rossann Williams, the president of Starbucks North America, at least until today when she tendered her resignation. And I feel completely comfortable in speaking for my fellow partners when I say we are more than happy to take full credit for that resignation. But in that meeting, we listened to her tell us that we are all partners and that the company has already done so much for all of us. And what more could we possibly be asking for? And I saw the looks on the faces of my coworkers as we were being bullied and manipulated into voting against our best interests. And that was the moment that I realized that I could not take a passive role in this fight. That not actively working against my coworkers was not the same as standing with them. They concluded this meeting by giving us the facts, and that if we needed more information about the union, we should contact one of our union reps. And so with my heart pounding, I raised my hand and I said, I'm a partner organizer, and I would be happy to answer any questions anybody might have about the union. And there was no turning back from there. And on December 9th, 2021, we won the first Starbucks union in the U.S.
We would indeed be remiss if we failed to inform our listening audience that the recipient of the Covenant 2022 Joe Hill Award was our own Judy Ansel. Judy joined the ranks of legendary recipients like Pete Seeger, Ann Feeney, Baltimore Vasquez, and Joyce Kornbluh. Honored for her 30-year commitment to labor radio, here are a few remarks from her acceptance speech.
I was deeply honored to have been recognized with the Joe Hill Award. In accepting it, I was asked to make a speech. I chose to recognize the tremendous volunteers we have and have had through the 33 years of the Heartland Labor Forum. Then I talked about why the labor movement needs a new communication strategy. I concluded with the following. It's been 23 years since the Battle of Seattle and the birth of Indie Media, whose motto was, "Don't hate the media, be the media." The Labor Radio Podcast Network shows that many union activists and some unions have made real progress in being the media. But at the national level, most unions and the AFL-CIO ignore that experience. Their media infrastructure is frankly last century, or at least pre-internet. We think they need to invest in developing an alternative media network and in training. We need a Twitter army of rank-and-filers to spread the ideology and culture of the working class. We could, with our numbers of union members, become a kind of grassroots un-Fox, deprogramming the anti-union, anti-worker ideology spread by Fox and on social media. I don't want to be alarmist, but labor, despite a recent positive rise in polls, is rapidly losing the ideological battle. We're facing fascism in this country and the world, and labor is one of the few institutions that has the breadth and resources to reach thousands with counter messages on how to fight back before we lose our rights to free speech. The fact is, labor doesn't have to invent its own media. It already exists. We already have a network with an infrastructure that needs resources and attention to be able to deepen its work and grow. If only union leadership would trust the potential of their own members enough to invest, promote, and train to let our millions of members become the megaphone for labor. Then we could create a democratic bottom-up, not top-down labor media. Help us do that. Check out the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Promote the shows that are members. Get your unions to sponsor. Start your own podcast or program. Be the media.
We will go out with remarks from Amazon Workers Union President Chris Smalls.
Elon fired Chris Smalls for organizing... for organizing his coworkers to demand COVID safety in 2020. Jeff Bezos didn't know the train of events he was setting in motion. Organizing on their own, without a national union behind them, just their own instincts, homemade food giveaways and a GoFundMe, Chris and his fellow members of the Amazon Labor Union on Staten Island pulled off a victory over Bezos that nobody but themselves was predicting. How many people here felt invigorated for your own organizing by the first union victory at Amazon? Chris Smalls, president of the Amazon Labor Union.
This is my first labor notes. Y'all gotta give me some energy. My first labor notes, y'all gotta give me a...
The 2022 Labor Notes Conference may well be a significant turning point in the annals of labor history. The spirit, commitment, love, and solidarity evident there will be hard to contain. Needless to say, we're all sick and tired of being sick and tired. In the immortal words of Frederick Douglass, the limits of the tyrants are measured by the endurance of those whom they oppress. Be assured that there are at least 4,000 troublemakers who can no longer endure.
And that means it's time for Washington Window on Workers. And with us on the phone from Washington is Mark Grunberg. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you, Judy. Congrats on the award. And you and Chris Smalls are a hard act to follow.
Well, I think you'll do your best. So the act that's going to happen starting August 1st is going to be a strike of 2,500 machinists in St. Louis. Tell us about it, Mark.
Well, basically, it's going to be a strike against Boeing, and in so many words, they got a completely inadequate contract offer from Boeing, and they rejected it. To give you an idea, the first year raise would have been 7.2%. That's lags inflation. The next 2 years would have been 3% and 4%. The 401k match would have been 10% the first year, but with a lot of holes, and 2% in each of the following 2 years. Yeah. And these are workers who are highly skilled, highly technical. They're not, you know, just your ordinary rank and file worker. They're people who are so skilled because they have to make extremely complex aircraft, mostly military aircraft.
Yeah, let's talk about what they make. First off, I didn't realize that Boeing had three plants in the St. Louis area, one in St. Louis, uh-huh. one in St. Charles, and another one in Mascotah, Illinois. What do they make? Is it all government?
And these three plants are all government, yes.
And what do they make in those plants?
I was going to say, this contract is pretty valuable to Boeing. Those planes, the Defense Department awarded $3.5 billion, in so many words, to make those planes, and that's just for this year. So
okay.
it's not cheap.
And so these are fighter jets for the Air Force, and I think you said they also are making drones?
Yeah, fighter jets, drones, and a trainer.
A trainer jet.
Training craft.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So take it, Boeing is making a bunch of money, right?
They're making a lot of money. I don't have their exact profit figures in front of me, but they're definitely one of the more profitable companies in the country. They're about to, by the way, move from Chicago, their headquarters, corporate headquarters, from Chicago to Washington to be closer to their biggest customer, the Department of Defense, $26 billion worth of customer.
And, of course, I remember that just a few years ago, Boeing moved a bunch of jobs to South Carolina in order to bust the union and get cheaper contracts for the Dreamliner that they were making, which is a civilian aircraft.
Well, as a matter of fact, no contracts, because those Dreamliner workers in North Charleston, South Carolina, are not unionized.
Right.
The machinists have tried several times and then not made it the last time. Actually, some of their had to pull their organizers out after some death threats started going around.
So I got time for one more question, Mark. One of the things you said in your article was that these machinist union members, or at least their leader, a guy named Kelly, I saw his name here somewhere here, said that that they were highly skilled. He said no one would just be able to walk in and be able to build these aircraft. I remember a very famous federal union called PATCO, which also claimed that they were irreplaceable. Is really anybody irreplaceable these days?
Well, it's not so much that they're irreplaceable. It's what I call a choke point. In other words, if a particular union or a particular group of workers is forced to walk off the job, the work not only there but elsewhere stops. And Boeing and these planes are a choke point. There are other things like ball bearing plants in Connecticut. You have a walkout in a ball bearing plant in Connecticut, you're all of a sudden your tanks, your planes, your jeeps and things aren't going to stop. Aren't going to go. In so many words,
we're out of time. But
that's their leverage.
So it's a kind of chain reaction. Well, we'll keep we'll keep watching, and we'll keep keeping our listeners informed on this big strike that's going to happen starting on Monday. Thanks very much, Mark. Talk to you next month.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye. And the Heartland Labor Forum calendar is also always on our Facebook page where you can find it. But just a few upcoming events. Show your solidarity with Starbucks strikers Monday, August 1st, 9 a.m. or all day at the Starbucks on 75th Street, just west of I-35 in Overland Park. Canvassers, phone bankers are needed for the No on Kansas Constitutional Amendment. Now until August 2nd, to volunteer, go to kansansforfreedom.com. Poll watchers wanted for primaries on August 2nd. Various shifts, contact your local party headquarters. And the Labor Media Meeting, a monthly meeting for union leaders and representatives of the media, will be Thursday, August 4th at 8 a.m. at the Argosy Casino, Barcelona Room. That's it for our calendar. Tune in next week. Our show is going to be called Inflation and Monopoly, What's the Connection? And David Bacon, More Than a Wall, 30 Years of Photos at the Border. The Heartland Labor Forum and is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Check out the rich diversity of programming related to workers and unions at laborradionetwork.org. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Stephen Hill, and congratulations to Stephen for becoming a fully accredited KKFI engineer. Stay tuned for the Thursday night special. It's Megan and Patricia with Rhythm and Soul. That's S-E-O-U-L Radio. It's K-pop. Stay tuned.
Listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss. And you can talk back to us, too. Send us your feedback, your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to Heartland Labor Forum, KKFI@gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming ones, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on this show are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening at 6 or to our rebroadcast Friday mornings at 5 right here, 90.1 FM.
We still got our pride, 'cause we are the